Our next guest, who covers the SEC for the Chattanooga Times Free Press, also does good radio as well, co-host of Press Row on ESPN's 105.1 The Zone, and longtime friend David Paschal. Hey, David, good morning. Thanks for taking a few minutes, and how are you today?
I'm doing fine, thanks, David. Hope you are. I feel like I was just listening to you interview Lindsey Scott driving out of town on Monday.
Oh, yeah.
Do a good job with those.
Oh, thank you very much. That was great getting to talk to Lindsey, and he's I know you've talked to him before too. He's just a great, great guy, and that was a lot of fun. And by the way, I just retweeted something you put on Twitter a couple of days ago. Saturday will mark the 25th time Vanderbilt has served as Georgia's homecoming foe. I wonder, and you know Tennessee, you know Vandy, you know college football. You know, I put you up there with JD on college football knowledge. But who's had them as their homecoming opponent more than anybody else? I mean, that's probably an interesting stat to either know or try to figure out.
Yeah, I would put Georgia's chances up there with just about anybody because, as you know, homecoming, you don't have it too early and you don't have it too late. So, like, the Vols wouldn't have Vanderbilt as their homecoming because that's usually a season ender. And so you've got to kind of think of other teams, especially since the divisions were formed in 92. You've got to kind of think along those lines, too. So, I would say Georgia is the betting favorite on that, but haven't done the research on it, admittedly.
Yeah, you're right. That's a good point. It's got to fall on the schedule correctly. And Georgia and Vandy usually play in October, and, yeah, that definitely makes a lot of sense. Well, now, are you going to be covering the Georgia-Vandy game on Saturday?
I will be.
Okay.
I will be.
So you'll be over here. What does it say about Tennessee and Vanderbilt that, and maybe this is Vegas backing off a little bit on Georgia, but what does it say that Tennessee was a 4 or 5 point bigger underdog here in Athens than Vanderbilt is?
It is where these programs are right now. I mean, for the first time in SEC history, Vanderbilt is coming off back-to-back double-digit wins over Tennessee. So Vanderbilt has been the stronger program these last couple of years, which is just amazing. Of course, in fairness to Tennessee, in 2016, they were starting their decline under Butch Jones. They had actually gotten up to number 9 in the country. I mean, that was the year they – you know, won on the Hail Mary and then lost an unbelievable overtime game against Texas A&M that was really, really wild down in College Station. But, you know, Vandy beat them by double digits at the end of that year and then just absolutely blew them out of the water last year, you know, when Butch Jones was already gone, Brady Hoke was there. But, you know, I think that plays into it because if Tennessee and Vandy were to play this week, it would probably be pretty close to a pick'em game, depending on where it was. But I also think, David, that maybe Georgia's outcome this past Saturday just kind of tapped the brakes a little bit on the hold off. Let's not make Georgia a 30-plus point favorite in every league game they play, just because sometimes sometimes games transpire like they did. I mean, Tennessee turned it over 6 times against Florida. They played a much cleaner game against Georgia, which is why the score never really got out of hand in that thing until very late.
David, one of our afternoon show guys pointed this out, and I didn't realize it. Over the last 10 years, and this was heading into this season, Tennessee had won 26 games in the conference, and Vandy had won 22. So that's not – I mean, that's over 10 years. I mean, that's not a small sample size there. To me, that's a very telling statistic about these two programs also.
Yeah, because when I was a kid, I mean, I think we're all kind of in that same age group, but when I was a kid, Tennessee, one of the big things when I was little, it was that same year that Georgia lost the Sugar Bowl to Pitt and Tony Dorsett. I mean, Johnny Majors was coming to Knoxville, and I remember that being a big deal when I was like a 9-year-old kid. And so, you know, when I was like 10, 11, 12 and starting to really get into college football, Tennessee was really weak. But that was only like a little 4 or 5 year window before Tennessee started going to bowl games every year. And then by 85, they won an SEC and won a couple others under Johnny Majors. But like you're talking about, since Philip Fulmer's last year in 08, Tennessee is now 64-66 overall.
Wow.
And that is just absolutely mind-boggling. And of course, you mentioned the Tennessee wins and the Vanderbilt wins. Derek Mason, you know, and I love Derek, and we have him on our show, and he's energetic, and I think he's done some really good things for Vanderbilt. It was tough for him to follow in the shoes of James Franklin, who did some historical things. But even though Mason's done some good things at Vanderbilt, he is 6-27 in SEC games, and as you know, that has occurred in a really, really weakened Eastern Division. I think the East is definitely stronger this year than it's been in the last couple of years, but to go 6-27 in the league games, not exactly the best job of capitalizing when your cohorts are down.
Talking with David Pascal from the Chattanooga Times Free Press.
David, outside of Alabama, who's the best team you've watched in college football this year?
Throughout the whole country and not just the SEC?
Well, how about both?
Best team you've seen in person.
Okay.
Or that team.
Is that what you meant?
Well, I kind of just meant in general.
Oh, in general.
But, we know that you go to a lot of different games. So why don't we just make this a two-parter, best you've seen in person, and then, you know, best overall.
Georgia, you know, I saw Alabama against Texas A&M, and that was really impressive when you consider what Texas A&M did against Clemson and the fact that Alabama was up 45-16 with 17 minutes to go in that game, and Tua Tagovailoa went to the sidelines with his 387 yards, and he was done for the day. So, I mean, yes, Alabama is by far the most impressive team I've seen, and it's interesting when you've kind of got this next group of Ohio State, Georgia, Clemson. You know, when Kirby Smart gets up there, and he's saying this with some regularity now about, guys, we're still a developing team. I think he's spot on in saying that. I mean, when you look at, I asked him a question about the quarterbacks the other day, and he's like, people forget Jake Fromm is still a sophomore. I mean, so he's got a sophomore and a freshman at quarterback. We know the situation at running back as far as how, you know, Chubb and Michelle had so many of the carries last year, and now you've got a new look there. You've got so much youth on the offensive line when you consider, you know, Andrew Thomas as a sophomore is one of your star veterans. I mean, so I truly believe that Georgia has a lot of room to get better. I mean, Alabama right now to me looks like a finished product, and I mean, they look ready-made for the playoff right now. But in that next group, you've got Georgia, you've got Ohio State, you've got Clemson. I know Oklahoma had the scare against Army, but it really does seem like you're talking about the same cast of characters. I mean, to simplify everything, the four teams that were in the college football playoff last year are 20-0 this year. So, I mean, to me, there's just kind of a gap. I think LSU's a little bit intriguing because they're not aesthetically pleasing, but they've got a quarterback now, Joe Burrow, that hadn't thrown a pick yet. And then when you're talking about a team like Auburn, I think you look at Alabama's offensive line, and I think you look at Georgia's offensive line, and to me, that's where those two programs are miles ahead of a team like Auburn, because Auburn's got a really nice defensive front seven. They've got nice receivers. They've got a nice quarterback, but you know, in Auburn's case, you had Kerryon Johnson leave a year early, Cameron Petway leave a year early, and it's kind of messed up their running game right now when you couple that with the offensive line. So I know it doesn't sound anything earth-shattering, but you're kind of looking at the exact same cast of characters that we were looking at last year.
David, what are your thoughts on the new redshirt rule and the four games and basically the drama that it created with Clemson last week, and especially adding on to that with what happened to Trevor Lawrence in the game? But what are your thoughts on the new redshirt rule?
We've got an official amateur waiver wire at the end of 4 weeks of every season now. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, the SEC teleconference, you know, last Wednesday, this just topic just dominated it, and every single coach used unintended consequence to describe this thing. And Will Muschamp said this was not something that was discussed a whole lot, this possibility being a ramification. So, you know, the Kelly Bryant situation's the most notable. You had the receiver at Oklahoma State who, you know, had 15 catches for 155 yards and two touchdowns, the McCleskey kid through four games, and he said he wasn't getting the ball enough. So, I mean, it really is an amazing deal how this is going to have to be monitored from here on out. I mean, but these are, you know, a lot of these are upperclassmen that are, you know, some, you know, have already graduated that are making the decisions that they believe is in the best interest for them. So it's kind of hard to fault that way of thinking.
Talking with David Pascal.
David, with Georgia's kind of, you know, the quarterback situation that Georgia's got versus some of the other ones we've seen around the country, I mean, you see how Alabama has handled theirs, or even sort of a lack thereof, that we saw Jalen Hurts kind of coming out and during Alabama's, I guess, A-Day or whatever, and kind of saying that nobody'd really communicated with him, and he felt kind of like they had kind of let him down a little bit. And then you see what happened at Clemson. Obviously, Kelly Bryant gone, so now there really is no controversy other than if Trevor Lawrence is healthy or not. How do you kind of look at the big-time quarterback, not really battles, but situations that we've seen in college football, and then relating it back to Georgia, how would you say that Georgia's maybe handled it versus some of the others?
You know, I think Kirby has done a really good job with it. I don't think Kirby ever officially named Jake Fromm the starter, but I, you know, when you kind of look back and you read into his quotes, did he really even have to? I mean, he kept giving the same line of, like, both guys are out there competing. We're competing for, you know, he'd like to throw in the cornerback spot or a linebacker spot, saying they're all competing for, you know, the opportunity to play. But he would always include, Jake is taking most every first-team rep. So, I mean, he kind of, without naming a starter, you know, lets you know a clear pecking order. And you bring up the Jalen Hurts out on the field when he kind of said all those colorful quotes in early August at their media day. You know, that really did kind of hone in on, like, whoa, we need to follow this situation at Alabama. This could be volatile. But as a credit to him, and you heard Tua Tagovailoa speak yesterday, Hurts has been very good through this whole thing, you know, letting Tua Tagovailoa take the leadership spot on the field and stretching and stuff like that. I mean, everything, I mean, he's kind of recognized there is a passing of the guard. And so, you know, in the situation with Clemson, you know, Clemson and Georgia seem to have the most similar situations because you've got these five-star freshmen that have come in. It's interesting to me that Dabo put Trevor Lawrence in really, really meaningful situations earlier than Kirby did with Justin Fields. And I think you saw Trevor Lawrence perform better than Kelly Bryant in those meaningful situations, which justified Dabo making that switch. Now, at Georgia, we've seen we're coming off a Tennessee game where Justin Fields certainly played the most meaningful snaps of his career, especially when you compare it to the South Carolina game where he got into the fourth quarter. But it has been fun. I think each of these situations have all been a little bit different. I mean, Hurts and Kelly Bryant were the older quarterbacks. They got replaced. Jalen elected to stay. Kelly elected to bolt. You know, Fromm is the older quarterback than Fields and has been able to maintain that deal to where Fields, you know, to nobody's knowledge, I mean, he doesn't seem discontent. I mean, he seems to be coming in and doing his deal, and obviously freshmen don't speak to the media. But it has been fun to watch them all because they've all been a little different.
Being in Chattanooga, which is, you know, you got a couple of main thoroughfares, interstates there, the geography of Chattanooga being basically in Georgia, in Tennessee, and Alabama, what is your listening audience like?
It's funny. I don't know if you saw this the other day. Darren Revelle tweeted it last week, but according to Nielsen Research, they had their top 10 college football markets based on the percentage of the population that follows the sport. And Chattanooga was a top 10 college football market.
Hmm.
And it is a very interesting, I mean, when you talk about from a radio aspect, I also have to deal with it from a newspaper aspect. One out of every three newspapers we sell goes into Georgia.
Okay.
And so it's obvious. North Georgia, when you're looking at like Walker County, Catoosa County, those are some of the fastest growing counties in our area. So it totally makes sense to do a lot on Georgia, which is why I'm down there most every Monday in addition to the games. Alabama's the interesting one because we sell maybe only about 1,500 papers into Alabama. But as you know, Northeast Alabama, going all the way down into like Fort Payne,
yeah,
that's not an overly populated area. But with Alabama, all you've got to do is walk into a sporting goods store, a sports store at Hamilton Place Mall or some of the other malls around Chattanooga, And you've had years where the Alabama stuff is front and center. And so, I mean, there's no question there is a huge Alabama audience. So on our radio show, we have a Tennessee segment every week, a Georgia segment every week, and an Alabama segment every week.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting place where you guys are. And I've always thought that, like you said, I guess back in the day it was big, big, big Tennessee, but Georgia and Alabama. And by the way, mentioning Fort Payne, we're going to have to play some Alabama later on in the show, Sam, so we can't get away from that. Hey, before we let you go, what was the – this is nothing to do with the SEC, but what was the TO situation like in Chattanooga, and how did that go off when it finally did?
You know, it was a nice thing for the university. I mean, it was certainly publicity for UTC. I mean, he is clearly – the most famous UTC athlete of all time. It's interesting. I mean, we have relationships with UTC's AD and sports information director and stuff like that. And they were really urging T.O. to have this ceremony in Chattanooga in addition to the one up in Canton.
Yeah.
But that nobody could talk him into that. I mean, he just did not, for whatever reason, did not want to go to Canton for that ceremony. So it was the weird deal of, you know, they had to mail him the – or some, I think a one of his former coaches along the way or something, he had a former teammate or a former coach that, like, picked up the yellow Hall of Fame jacket that they wear and drove it from Canton down to Chattanooga. I mean, there was a lot of weirdness to it, and it's one of those deals where you couldn't really put a number – on it. I mean, what constitutes the arena seats about 11,000, and so I mean, if you have 200 people there, I mean, it would just look disastrous.
Yeah.
So it's like, what constituted a good crowd? I mean, 6,000 or 7,000 would be kind of cool. 600 or 700, maybe not so much. And I think it was right at 3,000, which the way they had it set up with the lower level was pretty much full. It's not the best configured arena anyway. It was built in 82, and two-thirds of the seats are in the upper deck. I mean, so it's pretty bad as far as that goes.
Right,
but
right.
No, I mean, all in all, it wasn't bad, but there was definitely just kind of a weirdness to it. Like, you know, we talk about it in the show, and it's like, now, why is it happening this way again?
Yeah.
But so it was.
Sam's got one more question here for you.
Yeah, David.
Sure.
If you were a betting man, you had a stack of cash you'd put on this, would you bet right now that the playoff is going to be Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, Notre Dame, or would you take, I don't know, like the field, so to speak?
Yeah, that's a good one. I do think Notre Dame's got the toughest part of their schedule over with. You gave me Alabama, Ohio State, Notre Dame, and
Clemson.
Ooh, that's good. I do think if Georgia's only loss is to Alabama in the SEC title game, and it's a 12-1 Georgia, I still think I would still take the field, because I think there's going to be a Clemson, a Notre Dame, or an Ohio State stumble to where a and I'm not going to say just Georgia. I'm just going to say an SEC 12-1 team would be more highly regarded than one of those other one-loss teams. So I'll still kind of inch toward the field on that.
Great stuff, David. And thanks so much for the, as we like to call it, the Tennessee Vandy chat that we have with you every year. And hope to get you on again before next year. We love talking to you, and you do such a great job covering college football, and I've enjoyed reading your stuff over the years for a long time. Thanks, and we'll catch you again soon.
That sounds great. You guys take care.
All right. David Paschal from the Chattanooga Times Free Press, also the co-host of Press Row on ESPN 105.1 The Zone in Chattanooga.